It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
You know, the theme of this convention is United Together. They keep trying to remind people of that, but the message apparently is not getting through as protests continued and for the first time are migrating up to the convention center site itself. A large group of protesters moved from downtown Philadelphia last night to just outside the security perimeter at the convention site around 9 p.m. last night, at one point burning an American flag. At the arena, Bernie Sanders made a huge move towards a reconciliation with a magnanimous move when he interrupted the roll call vote to ask that Hillary Clinton's name be placed into nomination by acclamation.
I move that Hillary Clinton be selected as the nominee of the Democratic Party for President of the United States.
You hear the uproarious applause there, but some Sanders supporters didn't like it. They walked out of the auditorium in protest, moved to the media center where they staged a sit-in. Can you imagine trying to write under deadline with that going on in your face? At least they didn't have to go far to cover the story. But it paved the way for the formal nomination of Hillary Clinton. She spoke by video to the auditorium while her husband spoke in person for the first time as a spouse of a nominee.
She's the best darn change maker I ever met in my entire life. Earlier today, you nominated the real one.
We just put the biggest crack in that glass ceiling.
And with President Obama and Vice President Joe Biden scheduled to speak tonight, you've got to wonder whether or not those protests are also going to escalate as they, again, have moved in this area for the first time. So we'll see what's in store tonight, both inside the arena and outside.
All right, Doug McElway, Fox News. This morning, very, very early, talking about what happened at the Democratic National Convention being held in Philadelphia. This is Sandy Rios back with you. My first day back at the mic live after the RNC. And, of course, I've been watching the Democratic Convention as much as I can. It's hard to watch it, I have to tell you, because my own value system is so at odds with what they talk about that I find, you know, it's constant agitation. So it's a labor. It's a labor for me to watch it, I have to say. Bill Clinton, just to have Bill Clinton stand up and speak last night when I know. Remember, I did the first interview with Congressman Henry Hyde, who was the chairman of the committee that brought impeachment proceedings against Bill Clinton. And it was Congressman Hyde who told me in great detail and even off the mic some things about Bill Clinton's behavior and all the corroborated evidence, even girls when he was in England studying as a student that he had assaulted. And I mean, it's an unbelievable story. And yet and the same group of people who talk about women's rights and are so, you know, huffed about, you know, this supposed outbreak of rape, which I'm not in favor of rape, trust me, but it's the emphasis, the things that they talk about. And then they have, you know, their champion, Bill Clinton, he's the champion, to stand up and speak before them. It's very hard, you know, it's really hard for me to listen to him speak because I know what the man has done. Not one time, not a mistake when he was 15, but a pattern of life, of abuse of women, assault of women, disregard for women. And so to have him talk about, you know, this sweet little moment when he met his wife doesn't move me very much. So you see why it's a little bit of a problem. But let's listen to a little bit of what former President Bill Clinton had to say about his wife and how he met her last night.
I was so impressed and surprised that, whether you believe it or not, momentarily I was speechless. Finally, I sort of blurted out my name, and we exchanged a few words, and then she went away. Well, I didn't join the law review.
But I did leave that library with a whole new goal in mind.
Yeah, that's funny. Because, you know, I just remember interviewing two Arkansas troopers who, in person, in Chicago, when I was there, when he was running, Bill Clinton was running for president the first time, and how they told me, incredulously, how they had organized women, brought women, kept women away from him while he was speaking so he wouldn't be distracted. You know, and they were appalled. I think at the time they had gone public, they could not believe that this man was now being considered for president. And they somehow thought if they told their story, they could stop it. But no, 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 no. He was elected handily. And even after we knew what happened with Monica Lewinsky in the Oval Office, even during a call from a one of the leaders of state during a critical moment, that he was, not really having, I can't say it on the air. So, hard to take that. It really is. And yet he's the champion. So that's who spoke last night. This was a tender moment. If, it's all a big kind of mashmash, I have to say. I saw the opening of the convention. They started with Mine Eyes Have Seen the Glory, the battle hymn of the Republic, a black female choir singing it. And, the thing that struck me was, wasn't it just 4 years ago when they voted on the floor to take God out of their platform? This is just odd. I wondered if those women singing knew that. Did they know that? That their party had voted to remove God from the platform? It just is very, kind of hard to take because it's weird. It's just, I have to tell you, the God that we serve is a God of order. He orders not only the universe, the stars and space, separating the night from the day, the water from the dry land, but he orders our minds. And as I have said before at this microphone, I will never forget a conversation I had with a man in a refugee camp in Thailand. One of the, it was a Buddhist refugee camp, had been. And he had, because of the work of missionaries there, had become a Christian. And I sat on my knees on a bamboo mat with him and asked him, what difference did it make? Was there any difference in his life? He's a grown man. He'd lived all his life. What difference does Jesus make in your life? And he said to me, it changes the way I think about everything. And this is what it does. And so he's not the God of confusion. The Bible says he's not the author of it. So whenever there's confusion, this much confusion, the God that we serve is not in charge, that's for sure. It's not because of anything that he's doing, because he brings clarity, not confusion. And the further we get away from him, the more confused we get. Even Rachel Maddow said last night, which is funny, when do I quote Rachel Maddow? I'm asking you. When do I ever mention her name? Because I'm not a fan. I think she's very powerful. She's very eloquent. But boy, is she off the mark. But she said last night, she said the top of the speech, of Bill Clinton's speech, she found shocking and rude. He chose to tell the story of how he met Hillary, and that's what he's going to be the spouse, He's going to be he wants to be the first husband. So it's just kind of a strange situation. But hey, fear not. We just cracked that glass ceiling. That feels great. I mean, really, that's all that matters, right? We cracked that glass ceiling, and now, Hillary Clinton could be the president. Why is it I'm, breaking out in a cold sweat instead of rejoicing? You tell me. Well, all right. So last night, one of the moving moments, there's just no question, it was moving. The mothers of several of these kids that were shot by police gave their personal testimonies. And the first one up was the mother of Sandra Bland. Now, I'm going to let you hear her speak, and then I'll refresh your memory on who Sandra Bland was. But this was the first woman to speak whose child had been killed by a policeman. Let's listen.
I need you all to hear me tonight. Give me 2 moments to tell you how good God is. Whew. Hallelujah. Give me a moment to say thank you. We are not standing here because he's not good. We're standing here because he's great. Whew. 1 year ago, yesterday, I lived the worst nightmare anyone could imagine. I watched as my daughter, Sandra Bland, was lowered into the ground in a coffin. She was my fourth of five daughters, and she was gone. No, not on administrative leave, but on permanent leave from this earth. Found hanging in a jail cell after an unlawful traffic stop and an unlawful arrest.
All right, so she speaks more about that. You know, I'd have to, there's no question, who would listen to the hearts of those mothers and not care? Of course, that's the allegation, is that people on the right don't care. But it's just not true. Life is precious. And for a mom to lose their child like that, it is very moving. And I was, in spite of the confusion, and I understand this is not simple to discern even spiritually. I love that she said how good God is. And then she said, he's not just good, he's great. And I was glad, because that just washed over me. And I thought, people in that convention need to know that God is good and he is great. And he supersedes the confusion and the circumstances. And so I would say that was a very moving moment. Of course, the story about Sandra Bland is that she was in a stop for traffic violation, and the policeman, and she got into it. She ended up being arrested, and she ended up hanging herself in a cell. And that was the conclusion. Of course, the allegations from the left is that she, you know, somehow she was unlawfully arrested, and that she something that the inference is that someone else hung her. Well, that's not what was found. Just like with Michael Brown, we know now that he didn't say hands up, don't shoot. He had just committed a crime, and he was trying to kill the policeman. So we have to balance, you know, our sympathy with what truth is. And these moms don't do the memory of their children any favors by, I don't know if they willingly believe lies. Maybe they do, because it's their kids, you know. And we tend to be blind where our children are concerned. But, you know, the police in Philadelphia are having a hard time with this, because they're not being allowed to speak on the stage. And so they're quite upset, the police union, and they're being threatened in the streets. In fact, I'm going to skip ahead for a second here. This is Cut 7, Jeff, and this is Black Lives Matter in the street last night yelling. Well, let's just listen and I'll explain it to you.
White media, get to the back. Black media, come to the front.
White people to the back, black people to the front. That's Black Lives Matter last night. And also then they said over the loudspeaker, this is an anti-police rally. Black DNC resistance march against police terrorism and state repression. And then, of course, it goes on and on. So then it features these moms whose kids were killed by policemen for various reasons. And it's really a tragedy, because all lives do matter. I know that's not profound. You've heard that before, haven't you? But policemen's lives matter too. Shedding of innocent blood is not something that God takes lightly. And so now I guess the problem is that we know that the left is using these tragic stories to stir up dissension and racism and to stir the pot and stir the pot and stir the pot in order to overthrow the order that has been established. And, of course, I'm not talking about white over black, because I think we figured that out a long time ago. Did we not figure out that all men are created equal? Have we not made great strides? Lots of mistakes in the past, but I think even reasonable black Americans would agree that we have become brothers and sisters in this country. But the left doesn't want that to be the case, so they stoke the flames. Well, some good news coming up next. We need it, don't we? So stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
This message is provided by Liberty HealthShare.
You can control your health care with Liberty HealthShare.
Liberty HealthShare gives you freedom from health insurance.
You can finally make the right decisions for you and your family.
It's not insurance, it's medical cost sharing.
You can affordably control the cost of your medical expenses.
It's a group of individuals sharing the cost of health care. This is based on shared values.
You are not alone.
With Liberty HealthShare, you're part of something bigger. A group of people who care for and support one another.
Join the movement of people who share in medical costs and change the way you pay for your health care forever.
It's easy. Visit healthsharefamily.org right now. healthsharefamily.org. Enroll today.
Liberty HealthShare.
Together, we're changing health care for good. Check out healthsharefamily.org. healthsharefamily.org. Not available in Pennsylvania.
Jan Harper, wife of Pastor Bert Harper.
Sometimes it feels like I'm living in a fishbowl. You know what I mean? When your husband is a church leader, your family is constantly being watched. That's why we offer the AFA Pastor and Wife Fishbowl Retreat. And our guest speaker this year is American Family Radio's J.J. Jasper.
I'm very excited to be a speaker, and I'll be sharing comedy at this year's Fishbowl Retreat. I'm especially excited that my wife, Melanie, will minister to the pastor's wives. When speaking at women's events, she shares, if Satan can discourage you, he can defeat you.
If you could use 3 days and two nights of relaxation among people who understand your challenges, then join us for the AFA Pastor and Wife Fishbowl Retreat.
This year's retreat is scheduled for October 4th through 6th at the Linden Valley Conference Center in Tennessee. Get details at repairingthefoundations.net or call 800-326-4543, extension 300.
And we'll see you there.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Stearns with this Fox News and commentary next. How would you like to finish your degree online? Truett McConnell University makes that possible with their top-notch online program. You can even earn a master's in theology. For 70 years, Truett McConnell University has been preparing students to fulfill God's high calling on their lives, on campus or online. A degree that can not only change your life, but also your workplace. Truett.edu is the website. That's Truett.edu. Javier Chavez loved his job at Macy's. He was hired in 1990 as a door guard, worked his way up to senior store detective, watching over things at the Macy's location in Queens, New York. Mr. Chavez is also a devout Roman Catholic. Back in May, one of his staff answered a call about a distraught female customer and her daughter. They had run into a transgender person in the ladies' room. The man, who identified as a woman, was told to leave. He did and filed a complaint. Macy's told Mr. Chavez the transgender person should have been allowed to use the ladies' room. He explained that even though the rule violated his Catholic faith, he would still uphold store policy. A few days later, Mr. Chavez was fired. 26 years on the job. Macy's will not comment on the matter, but Mr. Chavez has filed a complaint with the State Division of Human Rights, claiming he was fired because of his religious beliefs. I'm Todd Stearns.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
All right, Sandy Rios back with you. We have so little good news these days that I want to bring you some this morning. It just seems there's so much news. It seems like a long time ago in some ways that we were talking almost daily about the Planned Parenthood videos that were produced by David L. Iden. I remember he did undercover videos in several clinics, some in California, I think some in Texas, and we were stunned and appalled to hear operatives of Planned Parenthood talk, you know, musing about buying Lamborghinis with the money, talking over, you know, drinks about body parts and what they sell for and human brains. And it was shocking, and it was a steady stream. And I think many of us thought, surely, you know, this is the time when Planned Parenthood will be defunded. This is inhuman. This is unbelievable. How could they be doing this? And then it led to a steady drumbeat up to a crescendo of nothing when the House leadership squelched any attempts to try to defund Planned Parenthood in the omnibus budget. I was quite upset about that. We worked very hard, and some pro-life groups even peeled off and gave cover to the Republican leadership, who then turned around in the budget and fully funded Planned Parenthood. That's what happened on that score. But David L. Lyden, strangely, as luck, no, not luck, this is the way things happen these days. After doing those videos, he and his partner, Sandra Merritt, were indicted by a grand jury out of Harris County in Texas. You remember we talked about that? And Dan Patrick, the Texas lieutenant governor, asked for an investigation, a grand jury. And the grand jury came back and actually, instead of indicting Planned Parenthood, indicted David L. Lyden and Sandra Merritt. But I'm telling you too much about this because we have big news this morning. And I want to go to Peter Breen, who is the special counsel for Thomas More Society. He represents David L. Lyden. He did on this case. He's also a congressman, legislator in Illinois. And Peter joins us this morning from Chicago. Good morning, Peter.
Hey, good morning, Sandy. How are you?
Very good. Nice to talk to you. I know it's early out there, so thanks for joining me, Peter.
And I'm actually still at the Houston airport. We're flying home this morning. So.
Oh, really? Okay. All right. Well, even better. All right. So what did I leave out in the telling of what were the charges against David and Sandra?
Well, they had filed two different sets of charges against David. So there's a misdemeanor charge for attempting to purchase baby body parts for profit. And then there was a felony charge for using the fake ID. They're charging it as tampering with a government record. So those were the two charges. And the misdemeanor charge was dismissed a few weeks ago by the misdemeanor judge, who said that the prosecutors did not charge it correctly. And then yesterday, on Tuesday, we had a wonderful result. We were going to be in there, and we were ready for a long, difficult hearing on our motions to quash the felony indictment. And on the eve of the hearing, just as it was about to begin, the prosecutors finally capitulated and said, yes, this grand jury was not properly able to look into David. They had been extended past their original term. As part of that extension, they then changed gears, which under Texas law you can't do. It's a set term. And if you extend, it's only to clean up business that had been begun. But they certainly had not begun targeting David during their primary term.
So, all right, now, in layman's terms, Peter, that means the grand jury personnel had changed. Is that what you're saying?
Well, and here's the thing. We had four or five very strong arguments. We had brought forward that the prosecutors had been sharing grand jury material with the Planned Parenthood attorneys. We were talking about how, a kid going to buy beer with a fake driver's license would have been charged with a misdemeanor, and they were trying to take David Lyden, take him to a 20-year prison sentence on a felony, and so that was inappropriate. It's not allowed for under Texas law. And then another argument was that, hey, the grand jury was impaneled for a particular term, and when it's extended, it can't change direction off of the extension. Extensions are just to finish up the business you had started. The prosecution, they took one of the arguments, probably the one that was least offensive to them, and said, hey, you know, we're gonna give up and go on for another day. So that. It should have happened months ago. They shouldn't have ever brought these charges in the first place, but we are a big victory, a huge weight off of David's shoulders and off Susan Merritt's shoulders that they're not facing 20-year jail sentences.
Now, that's just unbelievable. As I recall, Peter, the prosecutor in that Houston office or whatever office it was out of Houston was accused of, I think, one of the people in that office was, I think, on the Planned Parenthood board, as I recall. Now, I'm trying to do this from memory. And what was that story all about?
Well, there was a prosecutor in the office who was on the board of a local Planned Parenthood. The response from the district attorney was that that person was in no way involved with the investigation. This is a 300-person office. It's one of the largest district attorney's offices in the country. So I don't know if or whether that person really did have some involvement or if that in some way reflects on the mentality of that office. What I do know, though, is that the prosecutors who were running the grand jury were awfully friendly with the Planned Parenthood attorneys, and they were very much unfriendly to our clients, to David and to Sandra. And one of the problems was, this grand jury was impaneled at the specific request of Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, who's a good pro-lifer, and it appears that they really were not, they didn't do the job they were impaneled to do. And whether that you put that on the prosecutor, maybe the members of the grand jury didn't want that interested. But it came out after the fact that The grand jury never had a witness from Planned Parenthood sworn and in front of them. And you saw that all of the confidential grand jury materials that we submitted under the subpoena were then shared with the target of the investigation, which is entirely inappropriate.
Well,
in an investigation like this.
Peter, is this the same personnel, the same makeup, the same grand jury that when presented with the evidence of Planned Parenthood selling baby body parts? I mean, it's really hard to say. It would really be hard to prove that they did not, based on what David found with his undercover video. Were they the same ones that did not bring charges, same personnel that did not bring charges against Planned Parenthood?
Yes. See, and this was part of the issue was that the grand jury was impaneled in order to investigate Planned Parenthood, and then turns around and instead indicts David and Sandra Susan Merritt. And one of the charges that they had indicted David on was attempting to purchase baby body parts for profit. And you sit there and go, you can't have a buyer without a willing seller, particularly when the buyer only has a test company. Saying that David Dwyden could have even purchased baby body parts is ludicrous. All he had was a business card, a website, and a cell phone number, a P.O. box. You know, there was no company there. So that everyone in America knows he couldn't have purchased baby body parts, but Planned Parenthood certainly could have sold them.
All right, so the grand jury then really perpetrated a fraud, I think. Those are my words. Was it a judge that said last night, yesterday, that David Dwyden was relieved of the charges? Was it a judge who looked at all of that and said, no charges against him will be brought?
Well, so the district attorney has the prosecutorial discretion to seek to dismiss charges. And so the district attorney was the one we had about four or five really good, strong arguments. They chose the one that they wanted, and then they filed a very short motion to dismiss on the basis of that, the basis of our arguments on that front. And then, the judge, it's pro forma. The judge will dismiss the charge based on the motion of prosecution. But, in law, you don't always get to choose the way you win. That's just you're glad to win.
Right, exactly. Very good point. And it's true more often than not, actually. So people get confused. What just happened here? But I guess we would say justice was done, even if it was done unjustly, and the process was a sham. And but Peter, there's no recourse. When a grand jury made up of citizens, if you found out that someone was in there colluding, would there be any legal recourse against them?
Well, and one of the things that we were ready to do yesterday was we had motions to get the grand jury transcripts, to get the identities of the grand jurors, which normally would not be allowed, but in this unique circumstance, it would be allowed. That's not going to happen. So we won't necessarily know, what really did occur behind those closed doors. I've got to tell you, the reason we knew as much as we did was that after the indictments were handed down and the district attorney put out the press release and talked, was just crowing about it, the Planned Parenthood attorneys held a press conference and they bragged about the fact that they had secured these indictments against David and Susan. And in detail, he talked about all of these things that we said, that's not allowed. He shouldn't know these facts about the grand jury and its prospects. So that gave us the clues we needed to be able to do our investigation a little more thoroughly to get to the place where we were able to get this dismissed.
Is it possible that what you might have found out might have been so incriminating that they were willing to drop the charges against David in order to stop you from doing that?
Well, I can't speak to the motives of the prosecution, but I will say, look, we contended in our papers that this was very irregular. This grand jury was not conducted in a way that we believe was legal or appropriate, even apart from that extension order. But giving out the documents that have been subpoenaed into the grand jury, which are supposed to be confidential and secret, and then not merely giving them out, but giving them out to the target or the alleged target of the grand jury, that's really something. I mean, you just don't do that. We don't think it's allowed under Texas law or the rules of ethics.
The left never stops, Peter. And I was just reading, 2 weeks ago, I don't even think I said it on the air here, that they're coming after Kim Davis again. the Kentucky clerk who refused to issue same-sex marriage licenses. And, you know, she was in jail, and so, you know, things seemed to be, they had restored some order to her office and I think to her life. Now they're coming after again for some other alleged violation, which I can't even explain that. But do you think, I just can't imagine that it's over for David. I know that's not the best news in the world, but is there something else pending already in court? Is there some other charge in another state being brought against him? Planned Parenthood, I don't think will quit with this.
No, and they're not. I will say this in a hopeful and really blessed way. All of this wonderful news came down yesterday morning, the morning of the night that Cecile Richards was going to speak at the Democrat convention. So I think it was something that certainly we had a big victory on a day when the other side was showing its allegiance politically to Planned Parenthood. And here's the thing with David. The California Attorney General is looking into him. They executed a search warrant against him. I got a call from David one day, and he said there are 11 California Department of Justice agents in my one-bedroom apartment in and around it, all for misdemeanors, alleged misdemeanors of improper taping and then, the fake ID allegations. So that's still going on in California. We've got multiple federal lawsuits and other suits that the Planned Parenthood and the abortion industry have brought against David. You know, they're not going to quit, but neither are we. And David has been just a rock. He has been absolutely rock solid and really pressing forward.
You know, he is very impressive. And the thing I notice about David is that he never overstates anything. You know, I'm sure that he knew. He's young, but he has wisdom beyond his years. He must have known when he got into this, he had the courage of steel to do what he did already. And so I am wondering, Peter, did he secure Thomas More's support before he went into this, knowing that he was stepping into some very deep water?
Well, he was advised by counsel, and he certainly looked to us. We had a relationship with him from many years ago, but we didn't advise him on during the investigation. They did have some good lawyers. It was after it happened. I mean, we had to put together a pretty good-sized legal team. And I have to say, there were plenty of lawyers that said, hey, this is too hot. We aren't going to be able to take it on. We were glad to be able to put together a good, strong trial team. We've got about six attorneys working on this case. But, it's very expensive. It's very complicated. It's a multi-jurisdictional case. But that's something we've been glad to be able to respond after the fact. When he popped up, we said, oh my goodness, what happened to you, David? Boy. So it was something. We're just pleased and honored to be able to represent him.
Yeah. Well, you guys do great work. I mean, and you know that I know that. And so I'm delighted that he's working with you, and I'm really happy for this victory. Happy for him. Happy for you guys for the encouragement, and thank God for public law firms like yours that take donations and do this kind of work. That would break the backs of citizens if they had to legally defend themselves in these kinds of cases. And I think there are going to be more and more of them. No doubt. In fact, I bet you could tell me a string of them right now. Is there like an outbreak of more cases that have to do with religious freedom and expression than you've seen before?
Absolutely, and we, even during the little segment before we came on, they're talking about this the bathroom bills, and these issues of the bathrooms, and those and many other issues that we've been dealing with for years. I would say it struck me that it began once President Obama took office, and started to see a lot more of these lawsuits popping up, and we've been dealing with them for the last 8 years. We're not going to stop. They're not going to. The other side isn't going to stop. But we are not going to let them win this fight against us.
Well, Peter, thank you so much. Again, Peter Breen is a legislator in Illinois, so he does a job, plus he does this work for Thomas More. And Thomas More is a great legal organization, my friends, for a long, long time out of Chicago. Peter, thank you so much for your great representation of David Dalyden, who is a hero to many of us. And thanks for the good work.
Hey, keep up the great work, Sandy. Thanks.
All right, you too. All right, Sandy Rios, coming back to you in just a second on AFR Talk.
This message is provided by Liberty HealthShare.
You can control your health care with Liberty HealthShare.
Liberty HealthShare gives you freedom from health insurance.
You can finally make the right decisions for you and your family.
It's not insurance, it's medical cost sharing.
You can affordably control the cost of your medical expenses.
It's a group of individuals sharing the cost of health care. This is based on shared values.
You are not alone.
With Liberty HealthShare, you're part of something bigger. A group of people who care for and support one another.
Join the movement of people who share in medical costs and change the way you pay for your health care forever.
It's easy. Visit healthsharefamily.org right now. healthsharefamily.org. Enroll today.
Liberty HealthShare.
Together, we're changing healthcare for good. Check out healthsharefamily.org, healthsharefamily.org. Not available in Pennsylvania.
Consider serving the Lord with friendships. It's an opportunity to reach out to the needy around the world. They're now taking applications to volunteer, and they need help in the areas of mechanics, maritime, including deck, engine, and steward departments, food service, warehousing, and office. Check it out at friendships.org or call 337-433-5022.
To sharpen the faith of Christians and to share the good news of Jesus Christ with those who don't know Him. That is the mission of the Christian Worldview Radio program. This is host David Wheaton inviting you to join us this Saturday morning at 9 Eastern, 8 Central, to pursue that mission as we discuss a compelling topic from a decidedly biblical perspective. The Christian Worldview, Saturday mornings at 9 Eastern, 8 Central, right here on AFR Talk.
After crossing the Jordan River into the Promised Land, God instructed the children of Israel to take stones from the river and make a memorial. When their future children would say, "What do these stones mean?" the parents would recount the Lord's deliverance of Israel from slavery and Israel's arrival in the Promised Land. In each of our lives, there are events that ought to be remembered, events where the Lord moved and delivered us. Whether we use stones, photos, or special celebrations, it matters only that we take time to remember what the Lord has done and pass that testimony on to future generations.
Since 1977, the American Family Association has been informing, equipping, and activating individuals to strengthen the moral foundations of America. The Lord has given us many victories over the years that laid the foundation for our work today and into the future. Learn more at afa.net.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Even before the beheading yesterday of an elderly Catholic priest as he was saying Mass in Normandy, France's top internal security official warned that his country was on the brink of civil war. To avoid facing eventually a similar prospect here, we must do three things. One, stop importing jihadists. Whatever their number, we already have too many here. We don't need and can't afford to bring in more, as Europe is still doing. Two, we must designate the Muslim Brotherhood as a terrorist organization and roll up its jihadist infrastructure in America. The Sharia-adherent mosques, front groups, and influence operations that encourage and often enable the Islamic supremacist efforts to destroy Western civilization. Third, we must seek nothing less than victory over jihad. As Ronald Reagan famously said, there is no substitute for victory. We cannot live with or accept anything less. This is Frank Affney.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
In a nation already on a high state of alert, the response to this latest incident was swift. According to local media, at around 10 o'clock local time, two men armed with knives entered a church in a suburb of Rouen as a service was taking place. It's believed five people were taken hostage, including a priest and two nuns. Officials say the priest was killed with a blade and another person has been seriously injured. The two attackers were shot by police.
The two assailants left the church and they were shot dead by the security forces. Investigations are underway. We know that one man has been assassinated and one other person has been seriously injured and is fighting for life and is receiving treatment from rescue and firefighter services and from the medical teams. Operations continue, but the hostage-taking situation is definitely over.
The churches in Saint-Étienne-du-Rouvray. According to French media, the alarm was raised after one of those being held by the hostage takers managed to escape. Elite security units were quickly at the scene. The area remained cordoned off as investigators carry out their work and the churches searched for explosives. The priest has been named by the Archbishop of Rouen as 84-year-old Father Jacques Hamel. A Vatican spokesman said Pope Francis was horrified by the news. French President François Hollande has visited the scene. He said the two men who attacked the church had claimed to be from Daesh, using the Arabic name for the group calling itself Islamic State.
Once again, we are safe. We are facing another challenge. The threat remains high, very high. What we have lived over the past few days and even few years, we are facing a group of IS who has declared war against us. We should face up to this war using all the means within the respect of the law.
Forensic teams are expected to stay at the scene for the rest of the day. France's anti-terrorist prosecution unit has said it has taken over the investigation. Daniel Bircher, BBC News.
All right, Sandy Rios back with you. That's actually an excellent report from the BBC. Sometimes NPR, if you listen to NPR here or if you listen to the networks, they just are not telling us everything. They just aren't. I was reading yesterday. I can't repeat this. But I woke up this morning early thinking about it because it is so disturbing. The things that they are doing to people, not just the beheadings, but the other things they're doing to them that are not being reported, like the people in that restaurant in Dhaka. I can't tell you. I would just say that the report that I read, one of the investigators came out of the restaurant, fell on his knees, and threw up because he could not bear what he had seen. And these are the things that are not being said. I've read several reports on this, the beheading of the priest in Normandy. And many of them say, they'll say things like, we still don't know the motives. Well, the murderers yelled Allahu Akbar, and they took over and used the sound system to start screaming in Arabic. You Christians have killed us. And I don't know what all they said, but it was a report by a nun who was there, by the way. We should skip to that. I'll find her name in just a second. Sister Danielle. She was in the church when the priest was beheaded, at least when they began it, and this is what she had to say about it.
It was fear, especially when they entered. When I saw them, I said to myself, well, that's it, it's over. They were so motivated. They told me, you Christians, you kill us. Jack had just celebrated his mass. They took his place and they started preaching in Arabic. He was near the altar. They forced him to kneel and told him not to move. Jack loved all people, regardless of religion. That is all I can say. A faithful priest, a priest who loved everybody, who loved much.
You know, it's interesting, her observation, that they were so enthused. So this is something that you find in post-Christian societies like Europe. There is a dullness toward all things. I remember when a German doctor, I just can't think of his name. He came to my studio when I was at CWA. I got to know him very well, and I will think of his name in a second. He looked like a surfer. He had long blonde hair, and it was kind of flopping. He was a doctor who had gone to North Korea. And Dr. Norbert Wollertsen is his name. Dr. Norbert Wollertsen. And Dr. Wollertsen was telling me the things that he saw in North Korea, and he was talking about the tragedy, the lack of medicine, doing surgery on people without anesthetic. As he started to talk, I just began to cry. I could not bear what I was hearing. And the thing then that shocked me was that he said to me, Sandy, I just came from Europe. I told the people of Europe, I told the European Union, I told the leaders of Parliament, I told them what was happening. And he said, their response is, so? And he said, just to see your tears, to hear you respond from your heart, it meant so much to him. And trust me, and you know, Dr. Vollertsen wasn't even a Christian. He was the one, you may have heard me tell this story, I'll probably tell it till the day I die. He said, American Christians do not understand the power of God. And he talked about, he says, I've seen the power of God. And he's talking about the Christians he'd worked with. And yet again, he was the son of a Nazi in Germany. My point is that the coldness of heart is hard to understand for us still here, because we still have such a culture so strongly influenced by Christian faith. Hearts that are tender, even on the left. You know, when you see like the mothers of these kids that were killed by police, you know, your heart is moved and their heart is moved. And there's a tenderness in us. We don't go, so, who cares? We don't feel that way. And I don't believe that those mothers, if they heard, you know, the wives and daughters of the policemen that were killed, if they heard their testimonies or the ones whose children were killed by illegal immigrants, would feel nothing. I don't think that's true. I think we have a heart still. And that comes from our Judeo-Christian heritage. It comes from still the presence of God being pretty strong in this country, however misunderstood and however misinterpreted. But in Europe, not so much. And so this nun, her observation is that they're so enthused, basically. They're so passionate. I mean, imagine that, about what they believe. Imagine that, says the nun. So the priest is beheaded. They said the people on the scene, one of them said that one of the reasons he was beheaded is because he fought. He tried to protect himself. And so this is Dominique Lebrun, who was the Archbishop of Rouen who in France. His statement, he says, I cry out to God with all men of goodwill, and I invite all non-believers to unite with this church. And he says, the Catholic Church has no other arms besides prayer and fraternity between men. There were, I think, five people in that mass, and they killed the priest and I think held, as I understand it now, the stories are a little hard to pin down. For one thing, they wouldn't go into the church for hours. They were concerned about explosives again because these two, they're very young, both of them. At least one of them was very young. He's dead. And they're both dead. They were carrying some sort of fake explosives wrapped in aluminum foil, so nobody's sure about what the dangers were. So my understanding is two nuns were held hostage for a long time, and all I could think of was that report I read of the details of what happened in that restaurant in Dhaka, and I just shudder. And, you know, France is just reeling. They've had so much. You know, they had that concert where all those people were killed by the shooters. They had a Nice just, 2 weeks ago on Bastille Day? Maybe not even 2 weeks. And time passes so quickly, and there's so much going on. It's hard to even comprehend all of this death and killing. But France has had more than its share. And so they are really under siege. This is the other thing. We know now that one of the killers was being monitored by the police. He had an ankle bracelet on. He had been released to his parents. He had tried to go to Syria. He'd been in Germany for a time. He was colluding. He was a good friend with another terrorist whose name is not in my head right now, but it was another person who was has been on video beheading various persons. So they had gotten to know each other. And the reason for the attack in the church, we're still not sure what the motive was, right? Because that's what they keep telling us. Not sure about that motive. But he's on this ankle bracelet, and the irony is he is not monitored for something like 4 hours in the morning. So I think it's like 8:30 to 12:30 in the morning, or 12:30 noon. He's not monitored. And so he beheads the priest at 10 o'clock in the morning. It's just bizarre. In fact, some people in France are very upset. I should read this account. And let me see. This is by a gentleman named Stephen Bryan. He said, no one is safe in France. The murder of priest Father Jacques Hamel could easily have been prevented. How do we know this? The press in Europe is reporting today that computer files found in the apartment of a convicted terrorist had this church on the list to be attacked. And that was around a year ago. So you may ask, why? What was done? Well, the answer is worse than nothing. And then he goes on, he's very upset when he writes this. He talks about how the Jews have been attacked now in France by the Islamists. This has been going on for some time. He talks about all the lives that have been lost. And then he tells the story about how this electronic tag was turned off between the hours of 8:30 and 12:30 every day. So the killer just, you know, got to behead the priest at 10 o'clock when his electronic tag was not turned on. What madness? Why would you even do such a thing if you're concerned about someone committing jihad? I can't explain this. And then he goes on, this Stephen goes on to say, Nice, in, despite forewarnings of terrorism, the French police removed guards on the streets, allowing a terrorist driving a heavy truck full of weapons to mow down people trapped in the crowds on the main street. Sandra Bertin, a local police officer in Nice, complained that the police who were there were only permitted to carry light weapons, namely small pistols. She says, the truck dodged the municipal police barrier. The team couldn't stop it. You can't burst the tires of a 19-tonner with a revolver. Then other municipal police in plain clothes in the crowds were confronted with it. When she came to her turn, and then this is the report. When she came to her turn in her report of what she saw happen in Nice, she was asked to change her report. She refused. The resulting contretemps has resulted in France's interior minister, who is in overall charge of the security, to threaten to sue Bertin, the police officer. So they're having the same problem there that we're having here. And that's why we have to speak the truth. Interesting, Pete Hegseth, who works for, he's a Fox News, what I was for such a long time, analyst. He was on last night, and he's been asking questions about how people at the Democratic National Convention feel about terrorism. And this was kind of his summation. This is Cut 11.
Pete, you've now been in Cleveland talking to Republicans on the ground, and of course you're there in Philadelphia talking to Democrats. Is there a difference in mood among the people when you talk about ISIS, when you talk about terrorism?
Huge difference in mood, almost like different planets. Here in Philadelphia, they don't really even want to talk about ISIS. It's not a priority. It's not something they feel, you know, it's climate change, it's income inequality, it's things like that. ISIS is in the background, sort of something they know might need to be dealt with, and they think that Secretary Clinton, because of her background, will just be the person to do it. So not on the top of anyone's lips, really, here. And the mentions that were made from the floor were kind of glancing mentions. No one focused on ISIS or America's role in the world, and you certainly didn't hear it from delegates on the floor.
Actually, Pete went on the floor, and we heard a little bit of him interacting with some of the delegates. Let's listen to that. Cut 10.
Do you feel like we're at war with ISIS?
No, I don't. I think they would like us to be at war with them, but we have to be very careful in how we handle that situation.
Do you feel like we're at war with ISIS?
Do I feel that we're at war with ISIS?
Yeah, is America at war with the Islamic State?
I believe we have a lot of differences.
Do you feel like we are at war with ISIS?
I think ISIS is kind of a vague term. I think there are a lot of people around the world who are unhappy.
Do you think we're at war with ISIS?
Yes, I absolutely do. There's no question.
Do you think Hillary Clinton has a plan to defeat them?
Most certainly she does.
Can you explain her plan to defeat them?
I cannot.
You would support that if it was time to take action and time to do that? You feel like we should destroy ISIS?
I support our troops.
What is Hillary Clinton's plan to defeat ISIS?
Oh, well, I think you should talk to that important question. She should answer. What if I mess it up?
What would you describe as her top two accomplishments as Secretary of State?
I believe that she reached out to a lot of people and listened, and she made informed decisions by listening.
We have increased our goodwill with other nations.
Anything specific?
Specific? No.
All right. Pete. My favorite response is Justin Welby, the Archbishop of Canterbury, who wrote to pray for France. He wrote on Twitter, "Evil attacks the weakest, denies truth and love, is defeated through Jesus Christ."
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.